Welcome Lund Loyalists to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
Well, you're all juiced up and ready to go. Thanks for joining us. A Wednesday edition of the show, May 28th, as we get to the end of May. And there you see Bob Melvin, and we have some great audio. The Giants broadcast didn't have it, but the Tigers broadcast did, of Bob Melvin getting into it with the home plate late umpire yesterday. And some of that is frustration, obviously. It is episode 152, John Lund Unleashed. Thanks for joining us. The Giants offense is offensive, and you see Willie Adames there, and you see Lamont Wade Jr. and Patrick Bailey, and there is Gerard Encarnacion, who a lot of people think could save the Giants offense. I don't know that I would go that far, but we will try to be solution-based today. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 152. We'll get out and say hello and good morning to everybody in the chat room, as we often do, but let's just say good morning to everybody. And thank you for tuning into the show on this fine Wednesday edition of the program. And as I said, episode 152. Please make sure that you are subscribed on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. That would be outstanding. Please give us the like, the thumbs up. That helps the algorithm find us, grow our community, which we love doing. And also keep those alerts on. Like yesterday, we had like five or six pieces of video, audio, et cetera, that we had and we threw out yesterday. So if you didn't have your alerts on, you're like, bleh. And I always put it out to the Lund Loyalists first, and they get first crack at all the videos and so forth. So make sure that you check that out. John Lund Unleashed, make sure you have subscribed also on the Bay Area Sports Collective. You see that B down there in the corner. It's starting to look like a NASCAR below me, but the B down below me, that is Bay Area Sports Collective. That is my show, John Lund Unleashed. That is Tom Tolbert. That is Polly Mack. Today's Wednesday, so they'll do a night flight version tonight. But that is Polly Mack and Creative Tony, Polly Mack's Particles. Also, Rod Brooks and Friends, Quality Hang. Amy G has joined us. She's got a great podcast that you need to check out as well, and YouTube show about women in media, which is awesome. And Jeremy Affeldt, the former Giants pitcher, and we're adding every single day. So make sure that you get those alerts on and you subscribe to not only John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, but to the Bay Area Sports Collective. And when you see that logo, you know you are there. Good morning and welcome to those watching on X at John Lund Radio, on Instagram at John Lund Radio, or on LinkedIn, all those different places. So you can pretty much find us anywhere. Love comments, questions, thoughts, not only during the show, but also down below. If you're watching the show a little bit later, thank you for doing that. And you may have a question, comment, thought. You do not have to agree with me. That is one thing in this room. We're not like a lot of America. Hey, if you got a differing opinion, I think that's cool, man. Love to hear it. I don't think I know everything. I don't even know if I know anything. But reality is, it's great to get different opinions. That's kind of how I look at everything as far as the sports world is concerned. So again, thank you for coming in today. I had one more thing that I was going to hit. What was it? I don't remember. All right, before we get into anything, we'll hit the chalkboard. We'll say good morning to everybody. You cannot leave today because I have way too much going on today between a ton of video and the Giants offensive offense, Bob being tossed and Niners talk and NBA playoffs where I might have been wrong. We'll get into all those things, but say good morning to my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. He's the fine sponsor of the program, Reappell Sports Medicine. And if you click on that QR code right there, you're going to feel good like my wife does right now. I've told you this. She's doing the stem cell, and she actually just had another round. Her shoulder, her elbow, which she's always had problems with. And I tell you this, we watch TV and she has all these contraptions and frozen things and ice and all these things, so much so that we bought a freezer specifically because I got sick of it being on the food and stuff. I'd open up the freezer and there's all these ice packs. And so I was like, can we just get a small freezer for this stuff? So we did, because she was putting so much on her body. And now she feels great. She's not putting anything on there. We were in Vegas a month ago. I've told you this story. And she was walking around great, and it's all because of Dr. Reappell and the stem cell that she's doing there. So if you're not a believer, I'm telling you, just make an appointment today. Hit that QR code right there. He's in the East Bay in San Ramon. It is worth the trip if you're not in the East Bay. I'm telling you, he was one of the first doctors in California to do the stem cell. It is awesome. Like I said, I don't know the technical stuff and all those kind of things. He can explain that to you, but she is feeling great. I just know that. So click on that QR code. And of course, I'm doing the low T treatments, and I've been doing those for actually years with different places, but I have not found a better place, because what doctor, and he is a doctor, Dr. Riopel, does is you do a quick blood test. Oh, okay. This is how much you're short. You get right to that level, nothing above, not short, not above. And you feel great. You feel like your old self again. Your metabolism is faster. Your energy is more. Your personality is back. All those different things that you thought, well, it's just part of getting older. Actually, it can be replaced now, and you're going to feel a lot better. So again, you can either click on that QR code, or you can just Google it. Use whatever your favorite search engine is. Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. And they do all sorts of other procedures, not just the ones I'm talking about. One more time, click on that QR code. Make an appointment and tell Dr. Riopel that I sent you over. That would be outstanding. So talk to Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. All right, let's get to it today. Episode 152, Offensive Offense, Bob Tost Solutions. Because we are solution-based, we will try. 49ers breakouts. Matt Barros did a piece today in The Athletic, and we'll talk about it because it's a lot of pressure on young players. They signed a punter, yawn. I know that the guys and the people who do such a great job covering the 49ers, and a lot of them do it online and so forth, and any little thing that the Niners do is big news. To me, I try to give you the headlines, the big things, and the stuff you got to know. A punter coming down the field means your offense sucked, and I know they're important, but I can't do it. I just can't do it. Too much TNT. I'm probably going to be in the minority on this. I'll explain that. Knicks, Pacers, oops, I might be wrong about conspiracy theories. Random things happen throughout the show, and today is, I'm going to tell you about it a little bit later, but it has to do with burgers, which we love talking about. So anyway, that's what's going on today. That is the cover of the show. The Giants offense is offensive, and although we'll talk about a lot of different things in episode 152, that will take a lot of the time today. Good morning, a lot of people in the chat room today. My God, look at everybody, man. We tried to get in as early as possible. With the new way that we're doing the show behind the scenes, it takes a little bit more time to get everything on the air, so we may have to move to 9 o'clock. If you're greatly offended by that, please tell me and leave me a note or something like that, because we may have to do 9 o'clock. But if that, we have a great community, and we certainly don't want to lose anybody if we just move it back an hour, but we may have to do that. I have a YouTube advisor now. He's like, well, you need to do this, and you need to do this, and you need to do this, and you need to do this. But good morning to everybody. I see everybody in the room today, which is absolutely awesome. So that may be the thing we do. Dom is here, and Joy is here, and Kyle, and 49ers Faithful. By the way, if you don't know what I'm talking about, maybe you're on X or Instagram, come on over to YouTube and come over to the chat room. A lot of great people in this chat room, and they're absolutely great. Catalina is here this morning. It is awesome to see everybody. 49ers die hard this morning. It is absolutely great to see you. The 1-4-20. So everybody is in here today. It is great to see my good friend John Joseph and the Nutter. he must be what do we got here? Hang on just a second. Chained up somebody. Yeah, unleash me, please. Yeah, we're just doing some things behind the scenes that are making the show better. It tends to take a little bit more time. And believe me, I'm an early riser. It's not anything about that. But anyway, it is tremendous to see everybody. Good morning, good morning, good morning. And again, make sure that you are subscribed. Hit that like button and have those alerts on. All right, let's get to it. Offense is offensive. I don't know how else to put it as far as the Giants are concerned. So much so that Bob Melvin got frustrated. It was 3-1 in the ninth. And the only two guys that are consistently hitting on this team seem to be on base. So Wilmer Flores knocks in a run. It's 3-1, and Flores is on second base. And you would think at the beginning of the season, man, it'd be really nice to have Willy Adames up right now. Willy Adames meekly strikes out, and the Giants lose 3-1. Now, we're used to this around here in the Bay Area. It's because of the ballpark, the pitching. And this is the best relief. This is the best relief in pitching in baseball, and you don't want to waste that. From a standpoint of starting pitching, Logan Webb is Logan Webb. Robbie Ray, I was on with my friend Ian Furness. If you're watching from Seattle or listening from Seattle on the podcast a little bit later, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast. And I go on Ian's show every Tuesday on KJR in Seattle, and we like to chop it up. We're old friends. And so he gives me grief about the Bay, and I give him grief about Seattle, and we go back and forth. We talk a lot of different things, but it's interesting because the Mariners and the Giants are kind of a lot in the same animal, so we're complaining about a lot of things. But I was saying how great Robbie Ray was, and I was thanking him for that Mitch Haniger trade, and they were giving me grief back and forth. But you've got Logan Webb. You've got Robbie Ray. I think Birdsong with a few more starts, gets used to and gets stretched out, and he's going to be solid number three. And then Verlander comes back, and they got good news on Verlander yesterday, and he can be your four, which I told you at the beginning of the season, that's where he should have been slotted. He shouldn't have been a two. He shouldn't have been a three. Oh, my God, Justin Verlander. 42-year-old Justin Verlander coming off a neck injury. That's who they got. They didn't get 25-year-old Justin Verlander. They didn't get no-hit Justin Verlander. They didn't get, 100 miles an hour in the ninth inning Justin Verlander. They got 42-year-old Justin Verlander, which is fine. But you just have to make sure that you don't get caught up in the name and you put him where he should be. He's not a two. Robbie Ray's a two. Birdsong's better. He's a three. Verlander's a four or a five is what he is. And so you slot him at four, and then you duke it out as far as, who's going to land in Roop could be your five. And he's been better in May than he was in April. So that's good. You keep him there as long as you can. And you got guys and you got depth and you got Harrison and you got, the Carsons and all that kind of stuff. You got Wisenhunt. So they're going to be fine as far as starting pitching. They've got a great bullpen as long as they don't burn it out. So it comes back to what it always does with the Giants. Can they hit? And right now, if I'm Buster Posey, I'm in a panic's too strong of a word. Panic's too strong of a word for what the Giants are going through offensively. Because look where they are. They're still right in this thing. So it's hard for me to sit here and look at the standings and know how close they are. But that's where I think the frustration is. Let's flip this around and make some logic of this. There's expectations for the Giants now because, as we've said, we're a third of the way plus a game into the season. And the Giants play today at 10 a.m. So they're in this thing. The Tigers are really good. The Tigers over the last 100 games, I read a piece on it today, are the best team in baseball. They're the best team in the American League. So it's not like you're playing against nobody. And it's weird to watch them because it's not like they have other than Skubal, who's awesome, who they're not going to, the Giants luckily aren't going to see in this series, but offensively have been challenged just the same. And they, going into this series, they actually had the pitching matchup advantage in all three games. But what does that matter? When the bats are this inept, might as well just be taking a noodle to the plate, which essentially it looks like most of the Giants are. But I digress. So if I'm Buster Posey right now, I'm not in a panic mode, but certainly there's a sense of urgency. I realize, and a lot of people were saying this in the chat room yesterday, and you're not wrong, that there's a lot of baseball left to be played, but how long are you going to be in it? If you see the West to the Dodgers, which we all do, and we've talked about this a million times, what the wild card chase is going to look like. There's three teams in the East that are contenders. There's the Cubs, who look really good, especially offensively. The Cardinals and the Brewers are still in it. And then you look at the West, and we know that the Padres and the Diamondbacks are going to be in it. So that's a lot of teams. Even though there's three wild card shots, that's a lot of teams. And under Farhan, they were either hopelessly out of it. They won one season where they had 107, and then they were just like one or two games back. And if I was a betting man, and I am, then I think that the Giants, given this collection of players, is probably going to be, within two or three games of the wild card. So that means even though there's 162, and even though there's a lot of baseball to be played, it's likely going to come down to two or three games to whether the Giants make it in as a wild card or not. That's what it comes down to. So in my world of urgency, I won't call it panic, but in my world of urgency for the Giants, knowing that because of the wild card race and you've already given the division to the Dodgers, even at this early stage, because they're so good, then you've got to go in and you're going to play against, you're going to have, as I just mentioned, six, seven, eight teams for three spots. So, and it goes down to two or three or four games. So what does that mean? It means that Lamont Wade Jr. can't play first base anymore. You don't have to DFA him, that's fine, but as we go down solutions, I don't want to just come in here every single day and bitch and moan and bitch and moan and bitch and moan without offering solutions. Okay, let's start there, because he's the worst offender of the offense. He's got to go down and find his swing. He banging his head against the wall is doing no good whatsoever. So first of all, Lamont Wade Jr. goes to the minors. I don't care if he goes to Sac or Richmond or Arizona or wherever the case may be, San Jose, I don't care. Just somewhere to have someone look at him organizationally and say, all right, where's the swing? But more so to me, it's a mental game right now. When you're hitting a .160 a third of the way into the season, you don't believe in yourself. I just don't think he does. It's just logic. Let's just take sports out of it. When you're just getting hammered that way constantly, and I don't mean drinking wise, just, things are going bad, things are going bad, things are going bad, things are going bad. And it's all I'm sure he can think about. Just go take a break, man. I'm not down. I'm not ripping the guy. I'm literally doing the opposite of that. I'm saying, look, the guy needs a break. Banging his head against the wall, whatever they've done at the major league level, whatever Pat Burrell has told him to do. And I'm not blaming Pat Burrell for this, but I'll get to that in a second. But okay, first and foremost, you can't keep doing this with Lamont Wade Jr. So you sit down with Lamont Wade Jr. and say, sorry, bro. We're just going to have some other eyes look at you, and we're going to take the pressure off of you. All right? Just like 10 days. Just go on the injured list. We got a phantom hamstring strain or whatever the case may be, and you just need 10 days. So there's number one. Number two, Casey Schmidt, guess what? You're getting a wide runway, and we're going to play at first base for a little while. We're just going to see what you are. Now, if you aren't very much, we might give you five of these 10 games. And if you're nothing, then we've got to start looking at other options. Now, you may not want to mess with certain things. And Gerard Encarnacion just got going, but this is what he did last night.
Gerard Encarnacion and a pitch. And he swings and drives one to deep right center field. Johnson is back. He turns and it is gone. Welcome back, Gerard Encarnacion, going the opposite way.
I get it. I get it that he welcome back and he hasn't played very much, but again, a sense of urgency. So you may not in a perfect world want to rush him back and he can play some DH and then Wilmer Flores, who isn't the perfect solution at first base. I understand that, but a sense of urgency needs to be had right now. Not any more patience, 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 patience. That's for early in the season. As we said yesterday, it's not early anymore. A third plus a game into the season. It's time to flip the switch into urgency mode. So if Encarnacion is swinging the bat, he's coming up. I don't care. He was supposed to be there X amount of time. Don't care. So that's another option. I don't want Wilmer at first base all the time. I get it. Scour the minor leagues. So I brought up this terrible list, to be honest with you, yesterday. But it's your job, not mine. I'm just trying to be solution-based here. Trey Mancini's 33. 7 home runs, 34 RBIs, hitting .296 with an .836 OPS. Farina, which probably tells you why he's got some decent numbers, which is Arizona. So Arizona's probably not going to let him just go. I don't know what his contract says. Mike Ford is a former Giant. St. Paul Saints, 8 homers, 27 RBIs, hitting .260. He's a left-handed stick with an .846. Triple-A for Minnesota. Garrett Cooper, Triple-A for the Braves, not been great. Michael Chavis is a guy that was a first-round pick of the Red Sox. He's in Triple-A. Right now, his first round pick of Boston in 2014. He's got a 684 minor league OPS. Not great. James Altman has fallen out of favor with the Dodgers. Don't even know if he's ever played first base, but he's 6'2", 215 at Redwood City. And of course, Sarah, not great in the minor leagues this year. But my point is, Connor Joe is with the Reds. I'm not saying Connor Joe is the solution, but right now, when you have a first baseman hit 160, and you don't really want to put Wilmer Flores out there every day, because the problem with putting Wilmer Flores at first base every single day is that at this point of his career, he is certainly a DH. And you don't want to mess up with his mojo. So you can play him a little at first base, but you can't play him, I don't think, all the time there. You're going to probably take away from his bat if you play him too much in the field. So they're in definitely a rock and a hard place here. And then, as I said at the deadline, Rhys Hoskins, every time the Brewers win, I cry. Because if they were out of this whole thing, they might consider a trade even at this early point. Nathaniel Lowe is a guy I brought up. Look, Washington's already out of it. You'd have to overpay for this guy. But in 2024, 16 home runs, 69 RBIs, and a .762 OPS, which Lamont Wade Jr. can't sniff at this point. He's 29. 8 homers, 34 RBIs, .224. He's a left-handed stick. Those aren't great numbers, but at least you've got to get average production. And first base is a power position. So that's where it starts to me. You've got to do something. You've got to be desperate. You got to bring guys up. Whatever the case may be, Lamont Wade Jr. needs time off, and then you need to scour the minor leagues. I didn't give you a bunch of great names there because there are not a lot of great options. If you have to overpay for, again, Rhys Hoskins, go to Milwaukee and say, what is it going to take? Now they're going to say, look, we're hovering around .500. We don't want to give him up. They've got a mutual option on him for next year. He's probably not going to be in Milwaukee. But you got to, your job, Buster, and it's not easy, but you're the one who wanted to take it. You've got a charge right now to figure that position out. So maybe it's Casey Schmidt who gets the thought. But the short term probably for me is Lamont Wade Jr. goes out for 10 days. You take some pressure off that guy. You try Casey Schmidt at first base. If Casey Schmidt absolutely falls on his face, then you go Encarnacion, whether he's ready or not. He's a stick. You got to see what you got. If he isn't ready to play, then I don't know. Can Luciano be a DH? Can you just give him a shot? He hasn't been great, but he does have 9 home runs. It's a little bit of power. Yep, he's a right-handed stick. I get it. But at this point, right, left, who cares? You got to figure something out. So you keep going. And what teams do in every single sport is, first and foremost, they go internal. So it's going to go give Lamont Wade Jr. some time. Casey Schmidt gets a shot. Encarnacion gets a shot. again, DH, he's not going to play first base, but then Wilmer's got to play some more first base. Maybe it's Luciano who gets a shot at DH. Keep going. And I'm not to Bryce Eldridge yet because I don't even think he's close. I don't think I break glass on Bryce Eldridge. I'm not talking about him. Then after those options evaporate, or maybe you hit some gold for a little bit, at least a short period of time, then you start getting into some minor league options that I mentioned. Some of these veterans probably have outs if they get a major league opportunity. So maybe one of those guys works. If that doesn't work, then you go and you start to overpay for Rhys Hoskins or somebody like that. But there's got to be some sort of a plan here. And the plan right now for the Giants is keep Lamont Wade Jr. going out there. You know, keep firing him out, keep firing him out, keep firing him out. Like I said, he hit six the other day in the lineup, which is indicative and tells you exactly what you need to know about what this offense is doing. So first of all, that's being solution-based for first base. Are those the greatest options? No. But we know as human beings, you keep trying different things. You don't just do the same thing day after day and night after night. You've got to try to see if anybody is a better option. All right, so you're shuffling through a bunch of stuff there. I get it, not optimal, but they have the worst first base production in the league. So you got to do something. Second base, I keep skimming over second base when I talk about the offense. Do you notice something about Tyler Fitzgerald? Something he did last year and something he doesn't do this year? How about hit home runs? He has no power whatsoever. He went through like a six-week stretch last year, what, July and August, where he hit like 15 home runs. And he has no power. I don't know where it went. I don't know how they get it back. I don't know if there was, you know, what was involved in all those kind of things. But one of the things I thought about Tyler Fitzgerald was, God, they give him a full run at second base. A full season at second base, and, you know, he's good enough defensively. It's not like he's, you know, been horrible with the stick, but he gives you no power whatsoever, none. And, by the way, they got off to a decent start, you know, stealing bases, and Tyler Fitzgerald's a guy who can steal bases and is pretty athletic. They don't steal bases anymore. At the beginning of the season, they were actually trying to generate some runs that way. They don't do it anymore. Beginning of the season, they did. Now they don't. I don't know. You might want to try that. Might want to start doing that again. As far as shortstop is concerned, we've had the Adames conversation. If you want to go back to yesterday's show, I'm not panicking yet on Willy Adames. We got a long way to go on this thing, and he's 200 at bats into his Giants tenure. So I'm not panicking on Willy Adames, but same thing as last night. And Bob Melvin said in the post game, was it yesterday's show? Yeah, I played it in yesterday's show. You know, he's pressing, he's this, he's that. He's hitting worse on the road. He had two hits yesterday. But they're paying Willy Adames to not have two innocuous hits, to have a hit when it matters. And you're down 3-1 to Detroit. You badly need a hit, like an extra base hit or a home run or something. I get it, man. The dude pitching last night for the Tigers West throws 100 miles per hour. It's nasty. But you know what? You got paid a lot of money, dude. And that's the situation they need you in. Wilmer Flores is at second base. You're down 3-1, and you strike out. It's unacceptable. I don't care how you got two hits. And I didn't hear Bob Melvin's post-game press conference. I mean, he got thrown out, so I don't even know if he did one. But the reality of it is that I don't want to hear, this isn't Little League. Not everybody gets a participation trophy. It's not the hits you get. It's when you get them. And I say this all the time. I don't care if a guy in the NBA, I don't care if Steph Curry goes 5 for 25. If that fifth one he hits is a dagger three or wins the game, that's what matters. And it's the same thing with Willy Adames. I don't care that you got two hits yesterday. I'm not encouraged by that in the slightest. You came up 3-1 in the night, the guy that the Giants at the beginning of the season and Giants fans would say, that's the guy I want up. He did it on opening day. I was there. He got the game-winning hit on Giants opening day, on the home opener. He got the game-winning hit. And I talked to him afterwards, and I thought, okay, he's going to get going. And Bob Melvin saying he's pressing. You're pressing for what? You've been in the league for, what, 7, 8 years? Like, you signed a big contract, whether you press or not. Look, I'm not mentally into the guy, but it's kind of the same thing that's going on with Lamont Wade Jr. But the difference is with a guy like Willy Adames, you can't bench him. You don't have anybody better. What are you going to do, put Tyler Fitzgerald at short? They don't have organizational depth. If they had organizational depth, they would do something at first base. They don't have any organizational depth. So for all these things that were said that Farhan was going to rebuild this and rebuild that, they seem to me, as far as position players are concerned, to be completely dead in the water as far as depth is concerned anywhere. You know, Brett Wisely was for a second, and all the, you know, there's all these different guys, and clearly that, you know, we've talked about this for years, them developing position players. Well, it's awesome that Ramos is doing what he's doing, and they make the big move for Jung Hoo Lee, and Mike Yastrzemski's still hitting a little bit better than he normally would. I'm ready for a swoon from Mike Yastrzemski, which is happening right now, but the outfield I'm fine with. Chapman's got to step it up. I know he's got a lot of walks, and his OPS isn't horrible, but it's the same thing even when Lamont Wade Jr. is getting on base. I don't need power position as third base. I need Matt Chapman to hit home runs and knock in runs. I need Willy Adames to snap out of it. I don't care, pressing, whatever the case may be, whatever the excuse is, he got paid a lot of money, deal with it. And then as far as, you know, Pat Burrell is concerned, I don't know, as an uppercut, he would know the what's going on as far as Tyler Fitzgerald. It's fine. I mean, he's, you know, his batting average is not horrible or anything like that, but he hit 15 home runs in like a 6-week stretch last year. I thought he was going to be a 20 home run guy, killing him. And then first base, we just went over. So look, the organization right now, I guess my overall theme in this whole thing is, okay, you don't panic. There's 100 games left, but you have a real opportunity here with the pitching. You know, yesterday, was that Logan Webb's greatest outing? No, it was not, but they did enough. Your magic number is 4. We talk about this all the time. The magic number for the Giants is 4. You got 1. They got 3. You got to score 4 runs a night. That's just what the Giants have to do. And all this stuff about, you know, Oracle Park and this and that, they're on a road trip right now, man. You've got to score these runs. And for some reason, Willy Adames, and this was yesterday, was hitting 174 on the road. Now maybe he's up to 185 with a couple of hits. Woohoo! Way to go. But the organization cannot just sit back. Now, Willy Adames, there's nothing you can do. Matt Chapman, there's nothing you can do. Patrick Bailey is a great pitch framer, but every once in a while, maybe. And I don't know why they can't figure out the backup catcher position. I know a lot of people want to bitch and moan about Joey Bart, but that ship has sailed. Then if you're going to have Patrick Bailey as inept as he is at the plate, then that there's two things that happen there. Number one, it gives you more urgency to try to figure out first base ASAP. And number two, you've got to have a better backup offensive catcher, because at times in a game where you'd want your catcher, you'd want a defensive replacement for a catcher, sometimes you're going to have to pinch hit for Patrick Bailey, and you've got to trust your backup catcher. So they got to go out and get a better one. I'm not a Sam Huff fan. I remember as a linebacker for the Giants. No, I don't. I'm not that old. But he's not doing it for me. If you've got a hitter this inept, and I get it, pitch framing, throws guys out, blocks balls in the dirt. I love Patrick Bailey. But until you get first base fixed, you may have to pinch hit for him sometimes in a game, because you've got it in your head, offense for defense. Sometimes you need to get a good at bat up there. And he's just not giving you enough of those. So anyway, overall theme as far as the Giants offense is concerned, as we try to be solution-based for episode 152, they have got to have the right sense of urgency. So start shuffling through what you have within the organization, whether that's Casey Schmidt or Encarnacion and bringing him up a little bit early or whatever the case may be. David Villar, by the way, signed with the Mets. So not that he was going to be a solution, but I just wanted to let you know that. But you've got to go find, you know, scour through the minor leagues, whatever the case may be, and start shuffling through this thing. And if you can't figure it out, you know, give yourself, I don't know, 2-3 weeks to do this, a month. At that point, you're in July. And at the beginning of July, you can start making trades. And I know end of July is, you know, and you're still going to overpay, and you're going to overpay big time right now. But you have to ask yourself, the pitching is good enough. The starting pitching is going to come around. The relief pitching is the best in baseball. And yet you're sitting here once again as an organization with an inept offense. And there's not a lot of things you can do. You paid Chapman, he's staying. You paid Adames, he's staying. I don't see a better option in the organization than Tyler Fitzgerald at second base. The outfield really isn't the issue offensively. You have a catcher and a first baseman who are the worst offensive players at their position in baseball. And one is a great defensive player who you don't want to take out of the lineup. I get it, but you got to get a better backup offensive catcher, and you've got to start shuffling through at first base and finding a solution, because banging your head against the wall and continuing to run out Lamont Wade Jr., who I don't want to hate, is not the solution and has not been the solution. And now we're a third of the way into the season. I get it that you're going to say, we're going to wait, we're going to wait, we're going to wait, we're going to wait, we're going to wait. The back of his baseball card says this and that. Don't care. And to be honest with you, and I said this yesterday on social media, he should be DFA'd. If I'm sitting in that clubhouse and I got a guy hitting a .160 who's not a tremendous defensive player like Patrick Bailey and Lamont Wade Jr. isn't, and isn't really a speed guy and isn't really contributing in any other way on the team, and they continue to throw him out there, that's just a bad sign.
It tells me what kind of a team I have. It tells me organizationally I don't have any solutions. I don't have anybody who's willing to bring some solutions to the table. If you have to overpay, and I know it's not even June yet, and I don't know if Buster Posey's having those conversations, but there's got to be somebody better, and I hate saying this every single day, but my God, man. Here's something that's fun. So this is the Tigers broadcast, not the Giants broadcast. So the Giants must have muted this whole thing, but the Tigers broadcast did not. So you can hear clearly what Bob Melvin is saying to the home plate umpire. And to be honest with you, this is just Bob Melvin frustration. So take a watch and a listen.
Our microphones win again, and Tomboy, because the breakdown is coming for me.
Jason Benedetti and the Tigers TV network, and you can hear Bob. A lot of it, you know, you're killing us and this and that, and that's bullshit and this and that. A lot of that is just Bob's frustrated with the offense, and part of that, and this is kind of what I'm talking about as far as the you know, do something kind of a thing. He's just trying to fire up his team. He's just like, nothing's happening. We have dead bats. We have noodle bats. We go to the plate with a noodle bat. I got to try something. So anyway, there was Bob trying. I feel bad for Bob, but there's Bob trying about to get the offense going, but nothing. So there you go. Episode 152, offense. Bob tossed. Gave you some solutions. There aren't a lot. First base and catcher, and they're not doing anything with Bailey. So it's all about first base and trying to shuffle through some options. And there are not great options right now. And I think that if Buster Posey were sitting here with us right now, that's what he would tell us. And I would say right back to him that that's your job, though. You know, your job is to find it. Like the needle in the haystack, whoever that person is, it's happened before. You've got to go out and you got to try to find it. But the first solution to show that they're serious about trying to make a move and they haven't done this or try to find a solution is Lamont Wade Jr. has to go down to the minors and figure it out, both physically and mentally. He's not going to just find it on his own. I would be completely shocked if all of a sudden he just started hitting and getting on base and doing it. Like, we have enough of a sample size now that we know that's not going to happen on its own. You know, it's almost like an injury where the doctor is like, well, that might heal on its own, or he might have to have surgery. How about surgery, mental? Like, just go down 10 days, take the pressure off. What's the harm in that? I don't understand what the harm in that would be. Oh, we're going to lose something. What are you going to lose? 160? What are you going to lose? Strikeouts? What are you going to lose? Ineptitude at the plate? What are you going to lose? Bad at bats? I mean, that's what you're going to lose. That's the part where I'm like, well, you guys aren't serious. Like, you're not a serious organization. You know, I know you hate these references, but would the Dodgers allow someone to hit 160 for a third of the season and still play them? I don't think they would. You know, even a guy like Max Muncy has had his issues with the Dodgers in that kind of a way, but he'll hit home runs, he'll contribute. Like, he'll have a batting average of like 180 or 190, but then you look up and at this point of the season, he'll have like 10 home runs and 29 RBIs or something. That's not what he's doing. It's complete ineptness. And there, at some point, you start blaming the organization to say, why are you continuing to do the same thing? Or it's not early in the season anymore. All right, I'm done. All right, so episode 152. Offensive offense. Bob tossed. Solutions. We tried. This one's 49ers related. Let me make sure that we don't have any more baseball things because we're going to move on quickly. Well, then you give him an option. You say, all right, do you want to be DFA'd or do you want to go down? And what you're saying to him, and this is an injury kind of a thing. This is what I would tell him. I would say that you have a strained hamstring. This is what I've been saying the whole time. You have a strained hamstring. And you're going to go down for rehab. That's what you do. And you have an agreement with him. And I'm sure the agent gets involved and they're all pissy. But my question to him would be, what kind of leverage do you have? You're hitting $160. Do you want to be DFA? Do you want to go to another team? Maybe that's what he needs. But at this particular point, what value does he add? He's not adding any value whatsoever. What kind of leverage do you have? Who's picking up Lamont Wade Jr.? I mean, a bad team, probably. I mean, I could see Colorado or something like that going, okay. But he has no leverage, and that's just what I would tell him, options or not. I would just say, look, we're going to try to rehab you. We're doing you a favor. We're mentally rehabbing you because I don't think he's going to come out of it on his own. I really don't. All right, 49ers breakouts. This was Matt Barros this morning. And one thing really jumped out at me as far as the Niners. We got some Niners stuff to play for you, too. Some video with Mikel Williams, so do not move. But Matt Barros is great. And so this was the piece. I don't want to steal too much of it. Ricky Pearsall and seven other young 49ers poised to break out. And before I show you the list, here's what I think is interesting about this whole thing is they are so reliant on young players, more so than at any time I can ever remember with this organization, especially lately through this run. But look at these ages on these guys. Ricky Pearsall, 24. He's if you had to list them, and we've talked about Brandon Ayuk so much, I might put him, and I don't know that he's putting these in exact order, but I would put Ricky Pearsall number one. Because if you look at the offense, McCaffrey coming back, huge. George Kittle re-signed, great, or extended. Juwan Jennings is what he is. So, look, they've got talent. It's just Juwan Jennings runs a 4.7. George Kittle's a great seam route runner, but he's not going to, you know, scare anybody going deep. I mean, if you want to have the running game doing what it's going to do without facing nine man boxes constantly, and the Niners want to run the ball at the end of the day, Ricky Pearsall is not a burner, but he runs a 4.4, and he's supposedly a great route runner, and here we go. And his last couple of games, go back and look, he was really good. But if Ricky Pearsall can live up to first-round billing, whatever you want to call that, then that's massive for the 49ers. So Ricky Pearsall, I had to put number one on my list, 24 years old. Mikel Williams, who we're going to play a video of in just a second, 20 years old. You're counting on a 20-year-old. And look, they really don't have any options behind this guy. If he's not great this year, it's going to be a major problem. Nick Martin is 22. I've seen Nick Martin up close. This is why they got the two big guys inside, because they absolutely positively need to protect this guy. So 22-year-old Nick Martin, which we're going to get into in linebacker conversation with Fred Warner too. Stout is the young guy that is got to play inside because he's not an outside guy. He's 5'8", about 185. So Demo, as Matt astutely points out here, Demo is going to be a full-time outside corner now because they need this guy to step up. Cowing, I'm very skeptical of, very skeptical. I understand that they train together and all those kind of things, 24 years old. He had a nice 41-yard catch last year, if you remember that. But other than that, I think he's too small. And maybe he got bigger. I don't know what the case may be. He mentions Tariq Owens in there, who's 25. He's far too slow, Terrell's son. And Jordan Watkins, who intrigues me at 23, but you're seeing all these ages. Alfred Collins, maybe Collins and West. If I didn't say Pearsall was the most important 49er to step up this year, Collins at 23 at one of the defensive tackle spots and CJ West, a rookie, at the other one. If those two guys don't play well, what is it going to be? Kevin Givens and Jordan Elliott trying to keep big guards and interior linemen off of Nick Martin, who's all of 220 pounds, and Fred Warner? That's not going to work. Nick Zakel, this is one of those positions I look at and I say, there's got to be somebody. Is there a veteran out there that you can pick up last minute or something like that? Nick Zakel is going to be the one, or Ben Bartsch is going to be the one at left guard. Now, I never advocated paying Aaron Banks the ridiculous amount of money that Green Bay did, but am I envisioning the offensive line being better with the only change being Nick Zakel at left guard instead of Aaron Banks? Ugh. And then this is a really interesting one. You would have liked Marcus Siegel, the 22-year-old speed guy out of Kansas State. The safety runs like a 4.37. Look at that. I just did it off the top of my head. There it is. He was a fifth-round pick. And with, as again, Matt points out here, Malik Mustafa, we find out late, all of a sudden he is going to be out for a while with an ACL. And now you got this guy. And this is what I've been talking about with the safety. So Siegel, 22. Zakel, 25, Collins, 23, Cowing, 24. Basically, what you're talking about is the last two drafts. Stout, 23, Martin, 22, Mikel Williams, 20, and Ricky Pearsall, 24. Those are the guys that are going to make or break the 49ers season. Now, they have an easy schedule. I think they can win 10 games with me and you playing prominent roles on this team. But can you remember a time, a recent time, and Matt Maros isn't wrong in that assessment, that seven guys that age, I mean, Nick Mikkel's the oldest guy at 25, but essentially throw him out of there. Essentially what you're looking at is the last two drafts, a bunch of guys have to step up. Pearsall does. He didn't put CJ West's name on there, but you might as well put Collins and West together, those two guys, because they got those guys specifically as big interior bodies to keep interior offensive linemen off the linebackers. And it's, and what's happening here is the Niners are going to have these speed guys coming up. And so Malik Mustafa comes back. He's that. Sigel is more of an in-box safety, in-the-box safety. Martin, Warner, all those guys, you got to keep these interior offensive linemen off of our speed guys who are going to get through cracks and make tackles. That's going to be what they're going to do defensively. So can you do that? And then Mikkel Williams, who I'll play a video of in just a second, he was on the Up and Adam show, and he seems jacked to be here, which is really, really cool. But he's got to be great. Those three rookie offensive or defensive linemen have to be great from day one. And that's, to me, other like Pearsall's in there, the safety position. I think they're going to pick up a veteran. You know, it's funny, and I'm not saying I said this, but I was on with Scott Reese the other night on Sun, whatever it was. And I mentioned Julian Blackman because I know Julian Blackman. He played at Utah. I knew him as a player there and played with the Colts. He came in last year before last season, and I thought they'd sign him. He had a good year in Indianapolis, and I mentioned it, and then all of a sudden everybody's talking about Julian Blackman. I don't think it would cost a lot of money. You need a veteran on the backside. Justin Simmons was another name. He had been great in Denver, wasn't very good in Atlanta. But to me, it's kind of like the Deshaun Gibson signing of a couple of years ago, and I mentioned this yesterday, an adult in the room on the back end. Because you can't start a fifth-round rookie out of Kansas State, can you? Along with Jair Brown and a young guy in Renardo Green, that's just too much risk on the back end for me. So we'll see what they do there. I mentioned Mikkel Williams. This is pretty cool. So he was on with the Up and Adam show. And just his enthusiasm for being a 49er, and I think this is pretty symbolic or indicative of what Chris Kocurek does, even like in an OTA, like get you all jacked up and ready to play. So based on first impressions, you got to feel good about Mikkel Williams, but then you see Matt Barrow's article and you realize this guy's 20. He's 20. And he played in, I'm going to tell you the stat again, impress your friends with it. He played in the least amount of snaps of any edge player in the 2025 NFL draft. The least amount of snaps. So that just tells you logically, is he going to be ready to take on a prominent role and be a guy who can not only, everybody gets all enamored with the sacks. I told you about Leonard Floyd and the bad season he had last year, but everyone's like, Len, he had 8.5 sacks. Cool. He played 600 plays. So he was terrible last year. So Mikkel Williams has got to be much better than that. And he's got to give you, you know, 8 sacks would be great, but he's also got to be a run guy at the same time. And for a 20-year-old who played in the fewest amount of snaps who came out in the NFL draft last year, that might be a lot to ask. But from an enthusiasm standpoint, he sells you. Here he is with Kay Adams. I guess it says panini in the background, not the sandwich. So he must be at a card event here, but here it is.
Back with the defense. What has that been like? That's a dream.
Yeah, it's been great, man. Just playing for Salah in his scheme, in his system, where he give us so much freedom to go do what we're giving it our natural talent to go do what we're supposed to do. And then learning from Bosa. Bosa came in and helped me tremendously. Like, he's a great teammate. Just telling me little stuff about angles and timing and hands. So he's really been adding to my game.
What do you mean by that freedom? What does that freedom do for Williams?
Yeah, it allows me to go be the pass rusher and the run stopper that I can be. It allows me to play to my strengths. And I just thank Salah for having this scheme and this system.
People are sleeping on the Niners.
They are.
They're saying it's over, the windows. Brock just got paid, that's fine. But
thank God.
It's over. What do you mean, thank God?
Man, we need Brock. Brock's the guy. But I believe in Brock Purdy.
Can we talk about that? Why? Why do you believe in Brock Purdy?
Well, he's done it. Like, he's went to a Super Bowl. He's shown that he can take the team to that realm. So why not pay him? Why not believe in him?
You believe in him.
Yeah.
What do you think of this new uniform?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love everything Niners.
I mean, that is a dude. You know what he reminds me of? Like, you know, during your first day or maybe first week of your job, and you're like, yeah, and you're not jaded, you're not angry, and you got all these people that are, you know, that way, and they've been on the job for 20 years or with the company for 20 years or something, and they're just angry and bitter. And then you got Mikael Williams, who's 20. He's got his, you know, he's got his first paycheck, and he's like, woo-hoo! He's just feeling good. You know, he got his bonus or whatever, and he's feeling great. And he's all excited and all Niners all the time. I hate keep bringing this up with Brock Purdy, but does every team have, like, when they talk to any player, do they have to ask about their quarterback? Do you believe in your quarterback? This drives me crazy, man. Guy's got a great resume to this point through 3 years. One of the best resumes in the history of the position through 3 years. Went to an NFC championship game, went to a Super Bowl. I'll play something. Do I have the Houshmandzadeh thing? I guess I do. This is a perfect segue into that. And this is, again, I hate playing this stuff. I'll be 100% honest with you. I hate it. I sent out a tweet yesterday. Kendrick Perkins said a dumbass thing, and I was going to put it on the show. And then I'm like, why would I do that? It's just stupid. It's just clickbait. That's all they're doing this for. And TJ Houshmandzadeh, and some people put a connection. He's Brandon Ayuk's receiver coach. I know TJ. I actually was in Portland when he was at Oregon State. That's how long I've been doing this. I was doing pre-half and post for the Raiders and had TJ on all the time. He spoke very, very well. You can tell at the beginning of this that he's told to have you this opinion. I don't believe that he believes this, to be honest with you. And some people are trying to put that connection like Brandon Ayuk thinks that. It's not. You can hear by kind of the hesitation in his voice that he kind of hates doing this, but he's going to do it because these guys now are getting paid. Their opinion is bought and paid for. Kendrick Perkins is, TJ Houshmandzadeh is here, is the Morris Twins is, Boogie Cousins is trying this now in the NBA. All these guys are like, damn, I can get rich. You tell me what my opinion is and you pay me X amount of dollars and you can buy my opinion. So this is what it sounds like to me. But anyway, because this has gone viral, I feel like we have to bring it up, but I hate it.
I believe they did overpay for Brock Purdy. I would have given Brock Purdy $47 million a year.
Okay. I'm going to stop this as it's going on, okay? Just how stupid this is. Okay, if you give Brock Purdy $47 million a year, he's not coming in. So then your entire offseason is just like it was in 2024, okay? Plus, TJ Houshmandzadeh never looked at the contract because, as I've talked about, go for the first 3 years of the contract, and it's $9 million for a cap hit, it's 24.7 for a cap hit, and it's 31 for a cap hit. Very reasonable numbers. These numbers didn't preclude the 49ers from signing anybody in the offseason. So I'm just trying to be accurate because every single time. So first of all, you couldn't have offered him $47 million because he wouldn't have signed. The going rate for a quarterback, they didn't overpay for him, $53 million. That's the exact same amount of money, even though it's inflated, as Jared Goff got. It's less than what Jordan Love got. It's less than what Trevor Lawrence got. So how could he possibly be overpaid? Anyway, carry on.
That would have been the most I'm giving him. I needed you. We needed you.
Sorry, I have to keep stopping this. So here, let me do this. Just because I want to be on the screen at the same time as this. Okay. Who else were you going to get? Let me ask you that too. Who else are you going to get? Because it's the hardest position in sports to fill. Okay. You don't want to pay Brock Purdy going rate. You're going to pay him 47, which, by the way, TJ, what the fuck is the difference? 47, 53. It's all blown up with a thing anyway. And he got $181 million guaranteed. He didn't even get 265. And he's really, at the end of the day, because of all the voids and everything, it's probably not even going to equal $47 million. So this guy doesn't know anything that he's talking about. Great receiver. Great player. I'm sure he coaches Brandon Ayuk well, but please don't become a front office guy. 47, 53. He just pulls some arbitrary number out of the air, which he doesn't even know what he's talking about. But let me just play fun for a minute. Who else are you going to get? That's the problem. Good get paid great. You don't have to be the greatest. You have to be the latest. The bottom line is the whole thing is, who are you going to get? Kirk Cousins? Who are you going to get? Aaron Rodgers? What kind of leverage did the 49ers have to lowball Brock Purdy? Continue.
You last year, you went 1-6 against playoff teams.
He went 1-6 against playoff teams. Did he really? God, that's crazy because I didn't know that you played the game 1-22. Continue.
When we had guys, sir, Christian McCaffrey was out, Trent Williams was out, Ayuk got hurt, and
yeah, you're making the case for him. Thank you very much.
You couldn't really get it done.
So this is what I mean, that his opinion's bought and paid for, because he's sitting there going like this. He's searching. I've been there. He's searching for what he wants to talk about because he's like, Ayuk was out, Trent was out, McCaffrey was out, and he couldn't get it done. No shit. what quarterback losing those offensive players could get it done? So you just made the case for him, even though you didn't mean to.
I think Brock Purdy is a hell of a quarterback, but I'm not giving you money when you show me when we need you to take over, you can't take over. We need you to carry us, you can't carry us. But at one point, they said Jalen Hurts was overpaid. Now, Jalen Hurts is underpaid. You know, win a Super Bowl with the Eagles.
Honestly, one of the worst performances I've ever seen when your opinion is bought and paid for. TJ Houshmandzadeh was a really good player, very underrated. Him and Chad Johnson and the Bengals and all that kind of stuff. That was a good team. TJ, who's your mama? That's one of the funniest, fantasy football commercials of all time. I'm sure that because he's employed by Brandon Ayuk, he must be doing something to help him with the game. I'm not saying from a football standpoint, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Like I said, I did pre-half and post for the Raiders when he was on the Raiders, and he came in and talked to us and was a really good guy and was one of the better Raiders. I would always request him for the pregame show. He's a really good guy. It's nothing against him. It's just this whole process of saying, okay, TJ, you're going to take this view. And you can tell he's just like, he doesn't even have a clue of what he's talking about. I'd have paid him $47 million. Really? Because he got a guaranteed 181 in his first 3 years of his contract, which they can get out after the third year. He's getting cap numbers in 9, 24, 7, and 31. Hey, TJ, do you think that's fair for a, I don't know, top 10 quarterback in the league? I mean, PFF has him 11, whatever. And I've told you the story before. There's four elite quarterbacks in this league. You start at 5, and beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and Brock can make a claim for as high as 5 and maybe as low as 10 or 12. I mean, I don't care. I don't care about rankings, Mount Rushmore's, lists. I don't care about that. Brock Purdy has won football games. And for TJ Houshmandzadeh at the end there to babble all over himself, make the case why Brock Purdy struggled last year with all of the injuries, and then try to turn and say, because you can't carry a football team, which quarterbacks in this league, when they lose talent, can carry a football team? I'll wait. When Lamar, the Ravens have drafted wide receivers forever. Do you think that it's a good idea for the Ravens to have like Ronnie Stanley at left tackle, and they drafted the kid out of Washington in the second round to play right? Like, you're constantly putting players around your quarterback so they can succeed. You just mentioned Jalen Hurts being underpaid. What are his weapons like? Is AJ Brown or is Brown any good? Is, I don't know, Saquon Barkley any good? It's considered to be the best offensive line in the league. Is that good? Like, Philadelphia put a ton of guys around him. Is Jared Goff any good? A lot of guys around him. Like, every quarterback has talent. And if there's injuries, they're not going to be as good. What quarterback in the league can carry a team? If the 49ers get a stop defensively on 4th-and-1 against Kansas City, they win the Super Bowl. And is Brock then elevated? He wasn't even on the field. Like, if they get a stop on the final drive against Kansas City in the Super Bowl 18 months ago, 16, 17 months ago, Brock Purdy's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Then is he worth the money? Because he wasn't on the field during that final drive when the 49ers defense couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes. And many people can't. Did Patrick Mahomes do that on his own that drive? That was a nice 4th-and-1 run that he had. But was it the 49ers injured to Dre Greenlaw, in which then Travis Kelce dominated the second half? I'm not sure. Is Travis Kelce good? Is that a good weapon to have? I'll double check. Like, the logic from these guys is mind-numbing. It is so stupid. And I don't know how we got here, and we constantly talk about it. And like I said, I just think it's 262, and he's never going to outrun it until he wins multiple Super Bowls. But a guy like that who knows what the NFL is all about, and he's making some sort of an excuse of why. It's like, okay, this is what you'll take. This is your angle. Okay. And then in the middle of it, he actually makes an argument against his argument. That was outstanding. That was outstanding. Let's see. What else do we have from a Niners perspective? Do I have anything else from a Niners perspective? Oh, they got a punter. I mean, do I need to bring that up? Thomas Morstead, he's like 38 or 39 years old. Means Mitch Wisnowski's having injury problems, whatever. I've never seen a team defined by its punter. I've never seen a team not make the playoffs or make the playoffs or whatever because of the punter. It bores me. The punter means that your offense was inept on that drive, and so you got to punt it away. Generally speaking, they all can get it within the 20. Generally speaking, they have a certain average. I mean, yeah, it'd be nice to have some hang time, whatever. I mean, you know, it's too bad. Mitch Wisnowski's had back problems and injury problems. I'm not going to get all worked up about Thomas Morstead. The only thing that's interesting about the story is that he's a former New York Jet, and you're seeing Brant Boyer really put his stamp on there. He got a long snapper that he knows. He has a punter now that he knows. He's bringing in, you know, 92 special teams guys in the offseason. That's fine. I'm not going to get worked up over a punter. So as it says there in the middle of the chalkboard, punter yawn, punter yawn. I'm just that's enough. We're losing people by the moment just because we're talking about a punter. So anyway, there you go. There's punter news. Punter news. I'm probably going to be the minority on this by a great deal, but here's Charles Barkley. I'm just using this as an example to talk about TNT. But the thing that I think is interesting here is, so he's going to be on ESPN next year, as is the entire crew now, even Ernie Johnson. So the entire crew of Inside the NBA is moving on to ESPN. And Charles Barkley has been taking tons of shots at him. And I think part of it is, don't you dare put Kendrick Perkins on my show. Don't you dare put Screamin' A on my show. So hopefully it can be an independent entity and they don't screw it up. I've said that a million times. But here's Charles Barkley, but notice that he's softening up a little bit on ESPN.
Beat the hell out of him. The Oklahoma City Thunder are going to win the championship. And anybody want to bet?
Hold on a second. Here we go.
Base of the NBA is. Beat the hell out of them. The Oklahoma City Thunder are going to win the championship. And anybody want to bet me any amount of money, come to my damn house because I can afford it. OKC is the best team in the NBA. I've been telling y'all that for 2 months. Hey, ESPN, I love you guys. Don't try to make Anthony Edwards the face of the NBA. The face of the NBA is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Joker, and Giannis. You can't give it to people. They have to take it. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is taking it.
So he says during that thing, hey, ESPN, I love you. I love you, ESPN, which he's never said before. So obviously some higher ups and some big suits or somebody that he respects said, can you quit ripping ESPN? You're going to be on ESPN next year. So say nice things. So anyway, you know my backing and my thought on this whole thing. I want to bring a different angle to it. But in terms of the ESPN move, I worked for it for many, many years. And knowing what they've turned into, especially during the day. And now what they're doing is it's bleeding in at night. So if you want to have a bunch of jackasses say a bunch of stupid shit, like we just saw TJ Houshmandzadeh do on Fox, but ESPN does that during the day. If you want to do those shows and all that kind of stuff and the clickbait and all that kind of, you know, craziness and dumb polls and dumb lists and all those kind of things, that's fine. That's fine. During the day, that's fine. But at night, I don't know, this is just me. Maybe it's old school, but when you're sport adjacent, so NBA adjacent, pre and half and post game shows, NFL adjacent, pre, half, post game, Major League Baseball adjacent. When you're close to those things, the jackassery should go away. I mean, that's just what my thought is. So when I would do pre, half, and post games, I did it for the Raiders, I did it for the Cowboys, did it for the Niners, did it for the Portland Trailblazers, did it for the Utah Jazz. Like I've done a lot of pre, half, and post, and during all that whole time, I was always a talk show host. And so during the day, I could say crazy things and it was more about entertainment. And there was, but when I got NBA, NFL, MLB adjacent, the program directors of all of those stations told me, hey, man, it's about the game. So, you know, not as much craziness or anything like that. Use your personality, be you, all those kind of things. But, you know, be a little bit more serious because, you know, within that window, the teams expect a certain amount of professionalism. And I was like, I get it. I totally get it. So it was a different kind of me closer to the game than it was maybe just doing my regular talk shows. I was still me, but you had to have a certain amount of professionalism around those things. And so ESPN used to do that. And now for every Bob Myers and Michael Malone that's on doing conference finals, you have Stephen A. and Kendrick on the end just doing the same jackassery that they always do. And it really, to be honest with you, it exposes them for not being as informed as they should be, because you have Bob Myers go off on a wonderful like 2 minute tangent about something that's relative to the game, or Michael Malone will talk about from a coaching perspective, everything, and you learn something, and then they go off on the other end and they sound like a babbling idiot because they can get away with that because they blend right in during the day doing that. Okay. So the whole reason for saying that is I have this major fear, as I've talked about, of that show, which is perfect and chemistry matters. And I'm telling you, it's like any relationship. I've done all these different shows through 30 years of doing this, and you either have chemistry or you don't. And that group has chemistry. Those four guys have amazing chemistry, right? And people behind the scenes get it. And it's just this whole group. So I don't know who's producing it or anything like that, but everybody that they have they all just work seamlessly together, and that's what makes the show. So if you throw in a drop of Screamin' A, it screws it up. If you throw in a dab of Kendrick Perkins, it screws it up. Like anybody that, so they need to have, and I think, and I hope they do, because this is kind of what Pat McAfee has at ESPN, where it's just like, look, we're on your air. You own it, and we're on your air, but you can't touch it. Like you can't, like we'll make the decisions. All right. So I'm definitely afraid of that. And I shouldn't be, because look, this is just a TV show and it's one of the best of all time. And I don't know that I would call it the best of all time. That's really tough. And I don't care about Mount Rushmores. I don't. So it's all I know is this. When I turn it on, it's entertaining. Are they always accurate? No, but I know that. Like I know what it's all about. And it's fun and it's funny and it's light. And that's what sports should be. And a lot of times sports isn't that, because everyone wants to scream and yell, and that becomes the problem. Then even when Charles Barkley gets pissed off about something, it's funny. And even when Shaq gets pissed off about something, it's funny. And even when Kenny Smith is trying to make a real point, it's, you know, it's entertaining and all those kind of things. And they just fit together. So first and foremost, I think that ESPN is going to screw it up somehow, but I hope that they don't. Okay. With that as the backdrop, is too much being made? This is where I think people will disagree. Is too much being made of this whole thing? Like they did I didn't watch it afterwards, but they did. They're following around all season long, and it's the last season on TNT inside the NBA, and they're making a big deal of it. Like, I understand why TNT is doing it, because they're losing the NBA. And what they're trying to do is to say, well, this will never be the same. But from a consumer standpoint, it doesn't really change unless ESPN screws it up. But as a consumer, it doesn't really change. Those four guys are going to ESPN. And so they're doing this tour. Like Ernie Johnson was talking with Ben Stiller after the Pacers-Knicks game last night, which I'll get into in a minute. And they were acting like the show's going away. Like it's not going away. It's just going to a different network. And again, I'm just thinking from a fan and consumer standpoint, it doesn't really change. You know, the graphics will change a little bit. The music may change a little bit. Maybe they don't have rights to the music, whatever the, you know, the TNT NBA music is, whatever the case may be, but it's not dying. It's not going away. You know, it's not going anywhere. Okay. What channel is it on? I'll find it. You know, it's not like it's going to go to, you know, the NCAA tournament and they go on those channels and they make you go watch. What's the one? I'm trying to think. TNT, TBS. There's one that you can never find. Anyway. It's not like it's being hidden on that channel. I mean, TNT wasn't a big deal, right? Ted Turner had it, and there was movies on sometimes, and Sunday Roadhouse would be on, and this and that. And the Braves were on it for a long time, the Superstation. And then all of a sudden, this show becomes what it's become, and now you know where TNT is on the dial. You know where ESPN is. And like I said, hope against hope that they don't screw it up. And if they don't, then there's really no change whatsoever. Those guys are going over there, and it's going to be the same damn show. So they're making this big deal of this whole thing. Last season. No, last season is like when a show has a finale. Like that's the finale of the show. Oh, that was a cool show, The Sopranos. Oh, that was cool. They're not leaving. So anyway, maybe it's just a TNT thing, and it's not. I'm not pissed about it, but I'm just kind of like they're doing a going away tour the whole time, and it's not going away. It's just moving to a different network. So maybe, and I just put too much TNT on there. It's like, guys, it sucks that you're losing the NBA. But you were the ones who didn't bid for it. It's just moving to a different channel. And as far as consumers are concerned, I don't know. I don't care. You know, the thing I would be concerned about is more so, and I talk about this all the time, is the broadcast itself. Like, I'm bummed that Kevin Harlan can't do those things. You know, I'm more missing Kevin Harlan or somebody like that. I hope that the broadcasts are as good on NBC. And I think they will be. NBC, I remember growing up with the NBA on NBC, and I think it was good. I think it's weird that, you know, that they didn't get a different voice guy, that the voice guy's dead and they're using AI. Did that show the other day. Like, that's a little weird. But other than that, I don't know. I think it's a whole lot different. Anyway, you can give me your thoughts on that. NBA-wise, Knicks and Pacers, oops. I know what that means. I had, and I still believe it. I'm going to go down with the ship on this. I said that there's a conspiracy theory and there's no way that Indiana and Oklahoma City are going to play in the NBA Finals. It is 3-1 on both sides of it's 3-1 on both sides of the ledger with the East and the West. And the Pacers last night played great, and the Knicks just can't seem to get it going. Jalen Brunson, they're playing great defense on him, and they're making it really difficult. So Indiana looks like they're going to win that series. Oklahoma City looks like they're going to beat Minnesota. Both teams are up 3-1, and I pounded the table. Conspiracy theory! Conspiracy theory! And clearly it doesn't look like the case, so I am here to fall on the sword. And even though I will continue to say that I believe, not really, but I will say that the Knicks come back in this series because I just can't believe. I meant to do this, and I'll do this tomorrow. When was the last time? I mean, I'll do this while we're doing this because I think we can do this. NBA Finals history. When is the last time two small market teams went to the NBA Finals? Two small market teams. All right, so let's go back. Let me just do this on the fly. Last year, let's see here. Oh, come on, man. Let's make this easier. Okay, there you go. Last year, Boston and Dallas, two large market teams. Miami and Denver. Miami's a large market. Boston, Golden State, two large market. 21, Milwaukee, Phoenix. Phoenix is top 15, so that's iffy. 2020, Lakers, Heat, two major markets. Toronto, Golden State, major market. Golden State, Golden State, Golden State, three in a row. Golden State, two major market. Heat and Spurs. Miami's a major market. Heat and Spurs, major market. Oklahoma City, Miami, major market. Miami, Dallas, Miami, LA, Boston, LA, Orlando. See, that's what I'm saying. 2009, LA, Orlando. Orlando, small market. Lakers. Lakers, Celtics. 2007, San Antonio, Cleveland. That's probably the last time. But again, you're looking at LeBron James on Cleveland, so people are watching that. But San Antonio's a small market. Cleveland's a market in the 20s. So there's two small market teams in 2007. Before that, is this entertaining? Let's see. Lakers said it. So 99, Spurs, Knicks. So you had a small market, big market. 98, Jazz, Bulls. Jazz, Bulls, Sonics, Bulls. 95, Houston, Orlando. Houston's a big market. Chicago is in it forever. 90, Blazers, small market. Detroit, big market. So, yeah, I mean, 2007 is the last time, and even before that. So it is rare. Let's just put it like that. It's very rare, all right? And then I'll get off this whole thing. 2007, San Antonio small market versus Cleveland small market. San Antonio sweeps LeBron James in his first finals appearance. So that was the last time really two small market teams got in there. So it happens. It's just very rare. Very, very rare for it to happen. So my conspiracy theory holds. I don't know if that's going to happen because it clearly looks like it's not going to happen. Let's see. Oh, before I get some random things, I forgot a couple of things that I was going to pop on the board here as far as the 49ers. Let me go back real quick. Plus, I have to hit up on Skills Super today because I think it's about a dream. So hang on one second. Fred Warner is so good. Sorry, I missed this. Fred Warner is so good that Pro Football Focus did their top 25 linebackers or whatever. And there's one tier and it's Fred. Like Fred's the first tier. Fresh off a $63 million extension, stands alone in tier one. The four-time All-Pro has a long history of elite play in all facets, blah, blah, blah. Over the span, far and away, the most impressive linebacker in the NFL, generating a combined 93.3 PFF and a 91.6 PFF run defense grade. So there's usually, like, when you looked at quarterbacks, there was four in the quarterback tier. Brock was 11th. I don't care. But I just think it's impressive. Not that I'm a list of that, but they have one tier, one linebacker in tier one, and it's Fred. That's pretty amazing. And then the other thing that jumped out at me on these, on the linebacker rankings for PFF is that Dre Greenlaw was fifth, and he played in 34 snaps. So I'm not 100% convinced that Dre is going to be that, but Pro Football Focus generally goes by the numbers. So they go back to 2023 and they say when he posted a 88.9 PFF coverage grade, which I talk about that all the time, that in the NFL, linebackers come into this league. Let's use Nick Martin as an example. Speed guy, Oklahoma State, 220 pounds, didn't even look that big when I saw him down at HQ. But he can move. He's fast. Linebackers coming into the league can move forward. No problem. I've told you the Reuben Foster story. We were all standing on the sidelines. Reuben Foster was a rookie, and he's going forward, and it's like, man, this guy's going to be good. And then they start the passing drills, and Kyle Juszczyk runs an arrow route, which is right, just like that, sound effect. And Reuben Foster falls on the ground. We're like, uh-oh. And then like an innocuous third string tight end does it to him and everything else. And it's like the hardest thing to do for a linebacker in this league is not moving forward. It's you're going to be targeted in the pass game. And we saw it last year without Dre Greenlaw. We saw Campbell 59 constantly, which means the back of Devondre Campbell's jersey before the whole blow up. We saw it constantly, and he was targeted constantly. And linebackers are slot receivers, tight ends, backs out of the backfield. They constantly are targeted. You're going to be a target. And so Nick Martin or whomever is going to be with Fred Warner, they're going to be targeted. Okay, you can move forward. Okay, you can get through the trash and you can make a tackle. Can you cover? And a lot of guys come into the league and they just can't. So for Dre Greenlaw to have A, that ranking as far as coverage is concerned, you're losing that. And then the other thing is they obviously know all the numbers. And we'll have to come down to this someday. And again, they may do some kind of a last dance kind of a thing on this particular group of 49ers. If they don't win a Super Bowl, if they do win a Super Bowl, whatever. But there's going to be some sort of thing that's going to be put together about this team. And they're going to have to explain why they screwed up so badly in missing on Dre Greenlaw. Because as I've said this a ton about the 49ers offseason, I'm not upset about Hufanga. I'm not upset about Deebo Samuel or any of these. You know, I understand what happened with Ward. He could never come back to the 49ers given the off the field thing that happened to his family. I get it. And a lot of these guys were past their prime. I didn't have a problem with it. We have since learned, because we know what Brock's numbers are for the first 3 years of that contract. It's not prohibitive. It's not the reason they didn't sign these guys. They wanted to reset for guys that they felt like that their best football was behind them. That's why Jed York did that. It wasn't because of Brock's contract. It was because Debo's best football is behind him. And Ward couldn't come back. And they had Mustafa to start for Hufanga. They will eventually. They had Renardo Green to start for Ward anyway. They had, you know, those kind of things. They're one of their biggest busts of all time. Hargrave just didn't fit. So all these things happened, and it wasn't because of Brock's contract. It's because they decided these guys were overpaid and or their best football was behind them. That's what it was. But when it came to Dre Greenlaw, and obviously the injury was a major part of this, if he doesn't have the Achilles injury, A, maybe they win the Super Bowl. But B, there's no question of what kind of contract that they offered Dre Greenlaw, and they thought that teams weren't going to offer him more than a year. They miscalculated the market. And by the time they flipped and tried to get him back, he had already said, yeah, I'll go to Denver, and didn't want to go back on his word. But PFF has him as the fifth-rated linebacker in the league. And that one's going to hurt. Unless Nick Martin plays at a really high level, which I guess is possible. I mean, Fred was the third-round pick, 70th overall. I watched him at BYU. He played the star position. I was like, this guy? And he was great almost from the start. Remember, he wore 48? He was almost great from the start. So anyway, I forgot that yesterday, or excuse me, I forgot that earlier. I had this down in my notes here, the Fred Warner, tier one guy, Fred Warner. That's it. That's the tier. That's pretty damn amazing. So anyway, there you go. Random things throughout the show today. Anybody talking random? Because I got a great caboose for you today. A great caboose. So it's probably going to take us a while. Yeah, Hargrave was terrible. Just didn't fit. So when everybody's complaining and they lost this guy and they lost that guy, I'm not as worried as everybody else is. The Dre Greenlaw thing, there's just no way around it. And the organization would tell you that too. I'd just be like, we screwed that one up. I got to get to this before we do Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol. I can't wait. Because I know, Skills, by the way, I got your email and I appreciate it. Let's see, Willie Mack, Will Clark, JT Snow, and Brandon Belt are watching Wade play and either spitting in their graves or probably. Oh, that's great. Hold on 1 second, because I think, let me see if I can check my email here. Because you sent me an email, and I think, did it have the thing on it? Hang on 1 second. Hold on. God, look at all this junk I get. Seriously, I get so much junk. I don't know if I'm able to find it in time. If so... If not, I'll do it tomorrow. But I know it's here somewhere. And I don't, maybe you sent it to a different thing. Oh, no. Here it is right here. Oh, I love this. I love this, Skills. All right. Here's what Skills, and I'll send that up there. And thank you for the super. By the way, if you 100% want to get your questions, comments, thoughts on the show, no matter where you're watching, come over to YouTube to John Lund Unleashed and hit me with a super like Skills just has for $6.72. I thought when I read that it was going to be the dream, but here it is. And I owe you one anyway. If you're new here, Skills, our friend here, has the most amazing dreams in the history of mankind. You said, overnight, I had an all-time classic dream, Hall of Fame. I would like to share it with you in the Lund Stars. I like this. Far too long to post in our chat, and the super is at least three parts, but if I didn't get to use it, how would you like, and you said, how would you like to handle this? Send me an email. Sorry, Skills. I saw the email, and then, here, let me, I didn't even send anything back. What is wrong with me? Okay. Send it to me. We'll do it tomorrow. Sorry, my fault. I'm an idiot. Take full responsibility for it. You're right about that. I mean, they have a tremendous history of first base. And here's Lamont Wade Jr., a third of the way into the season. Like you said, massacring the position, I tell you. All right, hit me up with that, and we'll do that on tomorrow's show. Let's see here. Anything else before we go to the Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol? Because it's a good one today. And this is going to probably, every time we do this, this is not a new thing, but it's today. And every time we do this, it elicits a big response. So right now we are an hour 15 in the show. This will at least take 15 minutes. I'm predicting that. So hang on 1 second. Let me get the Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol music ready for you, because this is going to take a second. Not that it's going to take a long time. It's just that it always, this is a great debate. Here we go.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose Pistol, everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose?
I know some woman who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John. Here's John.
Ah, thank you so much. It is Sweet Clean Family Friend, the Caboose Pistol time. If you are new here, for years and years on my radio show, I would have a Caboose Pistol, and we'd have two or three crazy stories. And what I essentially will do now is, if there's a great story, I'll give you the great story. I try to find a news broadcast with it because it's funny, especially if it's sexual in nature and they have to say certain things and try to dance around those things. But today I have something because it is a national day. I hadn't looked that up in a while, and there wasn't a lot of great stories. So I thought, what is today? Is today some sort of a national day? And boom, look at that. Tough acted, connected, boom. It's National Burger Day, Hamburger Day, May 28th, 2025. So I feel compelled to have a burger. Look how good that looks. Honestly, you could tell me if I'm wrong in this. If, it looks like a nice bun, by the way, there. If I had to survive on one thing the rest of my life, it would be burgers. I mean, steaks are great. Pizza's amazing. Like, you know, it'd be in that realm, but burgers, you can do so much with them. Lately I haven't been able to do any burger that didn't have like bacon and some sort of different kind of cheese on it. I like a blue cheese burger. I like a barbecue burger with like an onion ring on it. Like just, I mean, there are so many different ways. Green chilies on it is amazing. Some people like an egg on a burger. I love an egg. I love a spicy burger. Put some blackening season on there is amazing. Just love burgers. The only thing I don't like is like the fake burger, the fake whatever they call it. I had one of those one time. Yeah, it was just okay. But as far as a regular burger is concerned, nothing better. I mean, honestly, at home, it's like, okay, what do you guys want to cook up? You want to cook up some burgers, throw them on the grill real quick? You know, and I am kind of snobbish. I definitely like a high-end type of a burger. Got to have cheese. Like one of our kids in the house doesn't do cheese on a burger. And it's like, I don't even know you. You're un-American. I don't know what you're talking about. I love throwing, like I said, bacon, blue cheese, probably a blue cheese bacon burger is my go-to right now. It's so good. Anyway, that looks amazing. So today is National Burger Day. So what I did was, let me get this up here. What I did was, is I looked for it. By the way, there's all sorts of, if you look around, there's all sorts of burger specials today. All sorts of burger specials today. So this was USA Today, and I think they did this last year, and it says, how did USA Today come up with its burger rankings? Come up with USA Today's 10 best for 2024. A panel of experts selected nominees across categories, then the publication's readers then voted for their favorites. So they got it down to a certain number, and then they ranked them. Number one, Double Char at the Habit Burger Grill. I got to be honest with you, and these are, again, you can come up with, you know, local ones that I'm sure are better. The local ones are always better, but these are just, clearly these are just the chains. So Double Char Burger at the Habit. And a lot of people don't talk about Habit. It's always In-N-Out or Five Guys or something like that. That is a really good burger. And when I saw it today, I thought to myself, The double char at the Habit is really good. And that might be, that's a go-to. Double at In-N-Out. I'm not going to say that In-N-Out is overrated, because it's not. But because of the line, and there's one right by me in San Ramon right off the freeway, I'm almost mad at In-N-Out. I know that's a weird thing to say, but I almost detest them because it screws up my driving, because it's right by my house and there's a line down the street, and so it pisses me off. Barbecue Rodeo Burger at Burger Fi. I don't know that. Barbecue Rodeo Burger at Burger Fi. Someone tell me about that. For Jumbo Jack at Jack in the Box. Got to be honest. Have not been to Jack in the Box in 20 years, maybe. Have not been. And if I did go to Jack in the Box, I was super stoned in college and we bought the Monster Tacos. And if I didn't buy the Monster Tacos at Jack in the Box, then we would do the sourdough burger, which had bacon on it and sourdough bread. Have not had a Jumbo Jack, maybe ever. So if somebody wants to back me up on that, cheeseburger at Five Guys. The thing about Five Guys is, whether you like them or not, number one, I think they have the best fries. Their fries, and they come in that big cup and they put like 3 pounds of salt on them. So they're eventually going to kill you, but still, the fries are amazing. And they give you so many of them. Plus, when you're waiting for your burger, you get peanuts to eat, which is nice. The great thing about Five Guys to me, and I'm going to stop at the five here. We're going to talk, and then we'll do the last five. The great thing about them is you can put anything on your burger. So you go in there and you're like, I want fresh jalapenos. I want bacon. I want barbecue sauce. Like, you know, Burger King says they're like, have it your way. But actually at Five Guys, they'll throw whatever you want on the burger. And that's nice. You can have grilled onions. You can have fresh onions. You do whatever you want. And they just throw that stuff on there and it's good. I do like bacon, cheese, barbecue sauce with fresh jalapenos. Good. Really good. So top five, according to USA Today, 5-1. Cheeseburger, Five Guys. Jumbo Jack at Jack in the Box. I got to believe that's overrated. Barbecue Rodeo Burger at Burger Fi. I've never had that. Double at In-N-Out. And Double Char at the Habit. And those are the top five. I'll do the other five in just a second. But what do you think of the top five? And what's wrong? Is there something wrong? I'm going to go out to what people are saying. Because when you talk about a burger, like, everybody's got an opinion on a burger, right? Everybody's got an opinion on a burger. So let me go down to burgers and what people are saying about burgers. Hold on 1 second. See, I knew this would go crazy. Today is National Burger Day. It's the only reason we're talking about it. Let's see here. And by the way, I'm acknowledging the fact that either at home or as an independent place, they make better burgers. Really? Whopper? I don't think I've had a Whopper in, I don't even know how long. You're a Whopper guy? No, I'm not. If you are, you are. That's, I'm not judging at all. I'm just wondering. I don't think I've been to Burger King in at least 10 years. And it was probably on a road trip. And it was like the only thing there. Have not had one of those. Pretty good. Nations is pretty good. Yeah, Nations I haven't had for a long time, but they have a good burger. I cannot deny. Chicken Sandoz. You're going chicken, Nathan? Going chicken? $1 chicken Sandoz in the late 90s. Let's see here. Hang on 1 second. Let's see if I can get that. There you go. The line is so long in Chico, 30 minutes every time. They could build one north of town and would completely do well. The one by my house is just like, it's so obnoxious that what it does is, so I go out, I take like a left, a right, a left, whatever. And then I get out to the main street. And when I go left, that's where the line starts. It literally starts like you get off the freeway and it's right there. And so it's like causing accidents. And so it's not that I don't like In-N-Out, because that's, you know, this big, great debate. I do like it, but the line is so ridiculous. I don't know why people, like, I understand that you have to pay extra for a DoorDash, but I same thing with Chick-fil-A. Like, I'm not waiting in that line. It's just, I have a personal problem with that. What else do we got? Oh, you don't like Habit. You're not a Habit person. I think Habit's good. I haven't been there in a long time, but they do different kind of fries and everything. Their burgers are pretty good. Let's see here. Yeah, you got to have bacon on a burger. Everybody, you got to have cheese on a burger. I mean, are you kidding me? Like I said, I want to kick the kid out, but my wife won't let me. I mean, you got to have cheese on a burger. What are you, insane? It's crazy. All right, we did the top five. I am a little bit surprised. I'll pop this back up here in just a second. Let's see what else we got. I think, didn't they just start Whataburger? Because like I said, I was in Dallas and they had Whataburger, and it's just okay. I mean, it just it was okay. I wouldn't say that it was bad, but I think they have Whataburger now. I could be 100% wrong. So there you go. So we did the top five, double char the habit, double it in and out. And again, it's National Hamburger Day today, which is why we're going through this in the caboose. Barbecue Rodeo Burger at Burger Fi. I've never had that. Jumbo Jack, that's got to be vastly overrated. Because like I said, I haven't been to Jack in the Box in 20 years, and we used to get the sourdough Jack, which had the bacon and the cheese and all that kind of stuff. And really, if I'm going to go to Jack in the Box, what I haven't for years, we would get the monster tacos. Cheeseburger at Five Guys, I got no issue with that, but you got to add bacon, fresh jalapenos, that whole thing. All right, number six, double meat Whataburger at Whataburger. I don't remember. I remember having Whataburger when I lived in Dallas and was not that blown away by it. It wasn't terrible. I'm just saying. I have had the butter burger cheese at Culver's. I've never had the double, but Culver's is more known for shakes and custards and everything, right? Isn't that right? Whopper at Burger King. Look at that, coming in at eight. I'm a little surprised. So Whopper comes in more than the quarter pounder. Double Western cheeseburger at Carl's Jr. I got to be honest, I have not been to Carl's Jr. in probably 10 years. But if memory serves, the double Western cheeseburger at Carl's Jr. has bacon and a onion ring on it, if I'm not wrong. And that was a good burger. And the thing about Carl's Jr. is that they drench their burgers. If like a burger like that, the double Western, they put so much barbecue sauce on it that like it's one of those things where I don't do fast food unless we're traveling. And then it's like, well, you have no choice, right? You pull off, you get something to eat, you grab a burger. A lot of times what you're trying to do is you're trying to drive and eat. You can't do a double Western cheeseburger from Carl's Jr. You can't eat that while you drive. It's all over you. Can't do it. And then the 1921 slider at White Castle. I'm familiar with White Castle. I think they're nasty. I cannot believe that that's a top 10 burger, even if we're just doing chains. I cannot believe that that's a top 10 burger. But again, I'm a West Coast guy. Sliders, White Castle, that's more of an East Coast thing. So that's your top 10. What do you think? What do they miss? I know that locals are better. You go to like a really good bar or something like that, or a place that's known for burgers. Yeah, you're gonna blow those burgers away for the most part. If I was gonna say what are the top burgers on that, just looking at the top 10 list, The Habit has got good burgers. In-N-Out has good burgers. Five Guys has good burgers. Yeah, the other ones, whatever. Oh, the Carl's Jr. burger is pretty good. So give me your thoughts on all of that. And again, today, the only reason we're talking about it, National Burger Day, May 28th. And I double-checked. Today is May 28th, right? Yeah, today's May 28th. So National Burger Day today. So I know that a lot of those places are going to have specials. So make sure that you get out because they're going to have specials today. And you got to make a burger today. Like at home, you got to do National Burger Day. You don't have a choice. You're not American if you don't. You have to absolutely have a burger today. You have to like pull out the grill. Let's go. Absolutely. Look at this. See, people are going crazy now. Jack in the Box taco on top of a chicken sandwich. No way. No way. Never heard of that. Oh, that's a great call right there. That is a great, great call right there, Lost Crew. Looks like Wendy's didn't make the list. How could it not? Like, how could Wendy's not be ahead of like a Whopper? Like, Wendy's is good. I don't think about Wendy's all the time, but they make a fresh burger. I think it's underrated. It's really, really good. The square Wendy's burger. Like if you're doing just a burger with some bacon on, just a basic thing, let's say you're driving down the road. Like I said, I think about it like I'm on a road trip and there was a Wendy's, a Burger King, McDonald's. I'd go to the Wendy's 100% of the time. Plus, don't sleep on the Frosty. And their fries are underrated too. So I'm just saying. Wendy's doesn't often get talked about. Their burgers are good. That's a legit burger. Yeah, that's a great call by you. What else do we got? Did Lamont Wade Jr. really do something? Are you kidding me? What did he do? Oh my God, it's 10:30. I didn't even know that. What's going on? What did he do? Somebody, I'm not even watching the game. I got to go back. I got to start watching the game. I got to get out of here. See, that's all it took is me to bitch and moan about Lamont Wade Jr. and he actually did something. Let's see, what else do we got? Is that it? All right, I better run. I got to go watch the Giants. I got this thing taped and Lamont Wade Jr. just did something. What did he do? Somebody let me in on it. I forgot. I need to do. I should have the box score up real quick. Hang on 1 second. What is? Oh, there we go. Oh, no, that's there you go. He got him on the board. He did. They are on the board. Two outs, bottom of the second, but it's not opening up. Oh, well. Oh, here we go. Let's see what he did. Let's look at the scoring here. Wade Jr. doubled to right. Chapman scored. I stand corrected. I'm sure he's going to have a great game. All right, there you go. That is that's all it took was me to bitch and moan. You're welcome. Bob Melvin, you are welcome. Giants lead middle of the second, 1-0 over the Tigers. Lamont Wade Jr., like I predicted the whole time, with a double and an RBI. All right, that is episode 152, Offensive Offense. Bob Tost, Solutions, 49ers Breakouts, Punter, Yawn. Too much TNT. The show's not going away after all. ESPN could screw it up, though. The Knicks and the Pacers, oops, maybe there's not a conspiracy theory, random things happen, and today is National Burger Day, so go out and enjoy yourself a burger. Don't tell me about a diet. You're not on some stinking diet. Don't do a diet. That's crazy. Anything else today? We did bring up a little Fred Warner. He's in his own tier, things like that. A couple of quick things before we get out of here today. Again, thanks to my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. All you got to do, you see the logo on there, the legs right there? That's Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. I'm doing the, I've got the low T, and I just, about 2 weeks ago, just re-upped on it. I feel great. Talk to him about low T if you're not feeling great. He absolutely is the solution. Quick blood test. About every 4 months, you got to go in there and get a quick procedure, and you're going to feel like yourself again. And as I always talk about my wife, she is doing the stem cell treatments, shoulder, elbow, foot. She's never felt better. And I'm not just saying that. That's those freezers, those wraps I tell you about all the time. We're not even using those things. So talk to Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, one of the first in the state of California to do the stem cell treatment. And if you're in the East Bay, that's a no-brainer. If you're not, it's worth the drive, I'm telling you. And tell him I sent you over. All you got to do is Google it. Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. Make sure that you check him out. He is absolutely awesome. In fact, you know what? I'll throw it up on there one more time. Click that with your phone. Get the appointment today and tell Dr. Riopel that I sent you over. If you can't get to that QR code, all you got to do is look it up. Google it. Use your favorite search engine, Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, right there in San Ramon. He is awesome, and they do all sorts of other great procedures. There's a QR code right there you can join. Actually, I make it really easy for you. It looks like a NASCAR on this page now. All you got to do is click on that with your phone, and you can join right now to John London Lee. So maybe you're watching on Instagram. Maybe you're watching on X. Maybe you're watching on LinkedIn, one of those places. You can just click right there, and you can automatically be subscribed to the channel, which would be nice, at John Lund Unleashed. Make sure that you subscribe to Bay Area Sports Collective as well. That would be tremendous. Everybody have a great day. Please give us a like before you get out of here, and make sure that you have those alerts on, because we'll be sending things out throughout the day. I'm going to go watch Lamont Wade dominate, and we will talk to you, what is tomorrow, Thursday? Yeah, Thursday. We'll talk to you on the Thursday edition of the show tomorrow. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!